Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987. Also, editor of PWTorch.com and MMAtorch.com, covering the worlds of professional wrestling and mixed martial arts on a daily basis. Check them out, PWTorch.com, MMAtorch.com. Both are mobile-friendly and, of course, desktop and laptop-friendly websites. It is Thursday, January 12th, 2017, and I am Wade Keller, joined momentarily by former WWE creative team member and longtime wrestling journalist, wrestling columnist, and blogger, Kevin Eck. And we're going to talk about all things WWE and pro wrestling as we look back on 2016 and move ahead to 2017, including we are now in the heart of Royal Rumble season, the heart of WrestleMania speculation season. Who is John Cena going to wrestle at WrestleMania? Who's Undertaker going to wrestle? Roman Reigns. We kind of think it's going to be Brock against Goldberg, but you could even entertain the notion they're going to fight at the February pay-per-view and then split off with different opponents at WrestleMania. So we're going to have all kinds of fun conversation today, and you can join us. The number is 515-605-9345. That is 515-605-9345. Just yesterday, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joined me, and he and I talked about all things WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA, Wrestle Kingdom, Kenny Omega, so much more. It was a midweek flagship. Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joining me. Always a great conversation with him. And then we did, after doing the live cast for over an hour, we did close to an hour of the VIP after show where we answered some more email questions and elaborated on a wide array of topics. So check that out at pwtorchlivecast.com. That is pwtorchlivecast.com if you want to find not only past shows, but also future episodes. When is a future show going to be scheduled? The best way to find out is to go to pwtorchlivecast.com. One thing I haven't mentioned lately, just want to get this out of the way up front. If you want to show support for us and what we do here at the Livecast, when you shop Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you do that, you can shop as you usually would at Amazon. Just click the Amazon link. You land right at the homepage. But instead of Amazon keeping all the profit for themselves, you pay the same price, but we get some of the profit that would otherwise go to Amazon. So it's a quick, easy way to show support for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. And we certainly appreciate those who are already doing it. It's very simple. Just go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. Go to our first break. Get that out of the way. And then we'll come back with Kevin Eck, a former creative team member with WWE. Definitely looking forward to talking to him about the process of WrestleMania booking and the ups and downs. This is something we've done on a pretty regular basis here on the Livecast from WrestleMania season, talking to people who have been involved in WrestleManias and WrestleMania planning. And I'm looking forward to continuing that with Kevin Eck and discussing the his experience working for WWE in that regard. But first, as I said, let's get our first break out of the way a little earlier than normal, and we'll be back right after this word from our sponsors. When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com. All right, we are back. I'm Wade Keller, and this is Interview Thursday. And we're going to be joined momentarily by Kevin Eck, who has written about professional wrestling for many, many years and spent some time working in WWE. The WrestleMania lineup, Todd Martin and I, for VIP members, talked about this yesterday, trying to come up with a potential lineup, most likely lineup, secondary lineup, and then a primary lineup for WrestleMania, or primary, secondary, and then wild card lineup. And it would have been I think it's fascinating that there's a chance that the WrestleMania lineup that everybody kind of thinks is likely to happen right now, or one of the, you know, maybe two major lineups, can change radically. And sometimes it's because we think we know what they're planning, but it turns out we don't. And then other times it can be that something, there's a curveball behind the scenes due to an injury or something like that, that can cause a change also. And that's what I am eager to see play out this this year. All right, so Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Wade, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to have you on. Thanks for coming on again. It's been too long. So much has happened. I was just talking about WrestleMania lineup, the WrestleMania lineup. Do you think in your mind right now you have a pretty good idea of what either one lineup or two lineups in terms of the top 3 to 6 matches that we're going to see this year? Or do you think this year it's more up in the air than most?
I actually think it's more up in the air than most. You know, I've seen the matches out there that everyone else has seen, and we can all speculate and make logical assumptions. But I think when you look at all the talent involved and you're trying to match people up, no matter what combination you come with, it seems like there are one or two who are kind of the odd man out. And so I do think it is in flux. And some of the things that we maybe thought were etched in stone, such as John Cena and The Undertaker, may not be etched in stone after all. So I do think, and I have no inside information on this, but I have a feeling there are some moving parts going on behind the scenes.
And when it comes to John Cena, he's intriguing. I mean, there's been talk that I've heard talk that the two major opponents John Cena has been considered, that are being considered for John Cena, are Undertaker and Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns surprises me a little bit, because if Vince McMahon's goal is to get Roman Reigns over as a top babyface, putting him against John Cena seems to guarantee that, well, guarantee is a strong word, because John Cena is a divisive personality with fans, but I would think a WrestleMania crowd would cheer Cena over Reigns. But I don't know if Vince McMahon would know that, but that also brings up the possibility that Roman Reigns is going to be turned heel after all, and Vince is going to go that direction. I also think the Raw versus SmackDown alliance, in terms of where they are brand-wise, makes me scratch my head a little bit when I hear that from people, that that's a match being considered. So I'm sort of skeptical of it, but I'm hearing that is one of the matches that is being considered, other than Cena Undertaker, which seems to be on again, off again in Vince McMahon's mind. What do you think are the odds for Cena, and what do you think about a Reigns Cena match? Does that sound like something Vince might be thinking about right now?
I think he would, because if you look at it, how many viable or logical opponents are there for John Cena? Obviously, Undertaker is a guy he's never faced on the big stage at WrestleMania, a guy he hasn't been in the ring with in years. And the other guy really is Roman Reigns. You know, pretty much everyone else, except for Braun Strowman, which I don't think they would go to that match. I mean, I can't think of anybody else really right now on the roster that would be a fresh WrestleMania opponent for John Cena. And I do agree with you. If you were to do a Reigns-Cena match, I don't think you could do it with them both as baby faces that half the crowd boos. I think you would have to finally pull that switch. And I feel like we've been talking about this for a couple of years now, about
yes,
pulling that switch. And, if you would have put a gun to my head a year or two ago, I would have sworn it would have happened by now. Is this the time that Reigns does go full on heel? And I think if you did that, it could work. I don't know how likely it is. I think it's a WrestleMania match for sure at some point, whether it's this year or next year. I mean, you've got two of the biggest names in WWE. They've never faced each other at WrestleMania. So that match, I'm sure, will happen at a WrestleMania. I don't know if it will happen at this WrestleMania. If that is, you know, in the talking stages or in the planning stages, I absolutely feel like this would be the straw. Like, Vince would have to pull the trigger on that heel turn. You know, if he's not going to do it now, then he would never do it. You know, I mean, I just think it would never work otherwise.
What, from your experience, and in fact, let's hit your bio point here now. We got right into WrestleMania discussion, but
sure.
Talk a little bit about the time that you spent in WWE, and then we can kind of mark down that era as we talk about your experience behind the scenes there in terms of how booking plans are the time in advance that creative team members generally know what's going to happen with big lineups. But first of all, kind of talk about your time in WWE.
Sure. I was there from summer of 2011 to summer of 2014. So I was there for the Rock Cena WrestleManias and for Punk's big run and Long Reign as champion. So that was the time frame for me.
And during WrestleMania season, at what stage did Vince McMahon's potential WrestleMania matches and then final WrestleMania top, I'm talking about top matches, not, you know, the undercard.
Sure.
When does that hit the creative team, and did it vary year to year?
It varied to some extent, but WrestleMania, you know, the main matches at least with the top players was thought out, you know, almost a year in advance. You would start coming up with grids and building toward, knowing that, you know, you had a target of building towards certain matches. Now, when I was there, some of those matches were pretty much a guarantee, Rock and Cena, Undertaker and Triple H. Like, some of those things were already, okay, these are etched in stone. It does fluctuate. And as you know, there are a lot of factors, whether it's an injury that occurs or whether it's the crowd reacting or not reacting a certain way. Or, you know, obviously, I think it's, you know, no secret that Batista and Randy Orton was – going to be the main event of WrestleMania the year that it ended up being Daniel Bryan's year. To my surprise and many other people on the creative team, we were just, you know, stunned that Vince really believed that that match was going to headline WrestleMania and get over Randy Orton and Batista. But you saw what happened. he eventually listened to the crowd and realized it was going to be a disaster unless he got Daniel Bryan involved. So to answer your question, yes, there's long-term planning, but it's always a lot of it's written in pencil because, you know, things can change and, you know, nothing's final till it's final. Till the attraction's in the ring, I guess, you know, it's nothing's finalized.
Does Vince McMahon hold a meeting when you were there with all the creative staff? Does it come across in a memo? Does it get told to you by a senior member of the writing team? Like, how does the communication logistically work for creative team members to find out, all right, here's what we're working with? Or do you just, how does that get communicated to you?
Well, again, it varied a little bit, but everybody on the creative team gets to contribute at some level. And so we would be asked at some point, you know, again, months in advance, you know, everybody come up with what you think, you know, basically book WrestleMania. What would you do? You know, looking at it, even if it's 8 months down the road or whatever, what do you think we should be building towards? What are the matches that you would do? So everyone kind of comes up with their own WrestleMania card. And then, you know, a much smaller group of writers, which I was fortunate enough to be in during my entire time in WWE, was, you know, it was usually on Thursday. We would always meet with Vince basically to go over Raw. We didn't talk about SmackDown very often. It was usually Raw and sometimes some long-term and, you know, looking at the upcoming pay-per-view. But then, you know, like, let's this will be a WrestleMania meeting. And so that group of, whether it was five or six of us in there, would present those matches and options, and that's when you would sort of get, you know, Vince's take on everything, and he had his own ideas. And, of course, Michael Hayes, you know, would be involved. Sometimes Hunter, you know, was in my early years, first year or two there, he was in a lot of those meetings, then he kind of wasn't. But so that's sort of the process, is everyone sort of pitches, you know, and Vince has always said this, he doesn't care where a good idea comes from. And I know that might go against the grain of sometimes what people think of Vince and being a micromanager, which he is. But he's always said, I don't care where the best idea comes from. It can come from, you know, the writer's assistant who just got hired last week, whose main duty has been running Dunkin' Donuts and getting his coffee. If he comes up with an idea that Vince thinks is the best idea, then that's the idea that Vince will sign off on. So he wants everyone's input. But at the end of the day, he's going to be the guy, obviously, having final say, putting it together. And then once you get a rough draft, as it will, then you go on from there. And we had grids. You know, I was surprised when I first started in 2011. You know, they handed me one of the sheets you get a pay-per-view grid, and it was literally every pay-per-view marked off for the next year, and some of the top matches. And some of those matches, as you would go on, as the months would go by, some of those matches would stay in place, and again, some of them would change. But, you know, all the way up to WrestleMania and beyond would be booked, or again, at least penciled in as here's a plan. So regardless of what some people may think, there is a long-term plan, at least, you know, thought of. But again, it's always with the, you know, caveat at the fine print at the bottom, you know, part subject to change.
Absolutely. Oh, no, that's fascinating. I love hearing about that process. And sometimes that kind of information goes against the grain of caricature that I think some people have of the way WWE operates, which is, you know, that nothing is planned ahead of time and it's all on a whim. That said, you know, your first comment at the top of the show was, I think this lineup is more up in the air than most.
Yeah.
What gives you that feeling about this year compared to past years when you were with WWE or not with WWE? What makes you think this is more up in the air? And then part two, what causes that to happen? And I know you, like you said, you were there when there were, you know, Rock, Cena, Triple H, Undertaker. There's some matches where it's just obvious that's where they've been heading or that's what has
right.
to happen. So that's sort of a, I don't know if that we'd call that a high bar or a low bar, but that's an extreme example. But kind of in general, what indicators are there that makes you think from your experience on the outside and on the inside, this is a little less marked down in ink this year?
Well, I think just as a fan watching it, I looking at storylines and the way things play out on TV, I mean, I think guys like us that have watched this for years and years, you get pretty good, you know, even before you had any quote unquote insider knowledge, you get pretty good at figuring out, oh, I can see where they're going with this. I see what they're building towards. And so some of these matches just are very easy to predict. This year, I haven't really gotten that feeling as I'm watching it that I can see. I have a feeling on, you know, a few things, but I can't sit down and write down the whole WrestleMania card and say I feel confident that this is what's going to happen. Now, on the inside as to why that is the way it is, you know, I think there just aren't some of those obvious home run, you know, slam dunk WrestleMania matches that just immediately, you know, almost themselves. I don't think you really have those this year. And, you know, Brock Lesnar obviously is a huge part of WrestleMania, a huge attraction. I don't think there was any plan, you know, going back months and months to bring Goldberg in as a WrestleMania. You know, I think as we've all heard and read, and, you know, I think Goldberg was thought to be a one-off. Now all of a sudden we're talking potentially Goldberg and Brock Lesnar out of the blue. And I don't think anybody was thinking about that. You know, there's no natural opponent right now for the top guys, Roman Reigns, AJ Styles. Who is his WrestleMania opponent? There's no name that jumps out at you on if you look at the SmackDown roster, you know, who AJ Styles is going to face. So I think it's a combination of a lot of matches that are marquee matches having already been done. And, you know, just the way it is right now with there's a lot of guys. I think the brand split has played into this as well. You have several guys that are quote-unquote top guys, and they're somewhat limited with the brand split as to who they can face on the big stage. Unless we just erase the brand split at WrestleMania and we start, you know, crossing brands.
Even then, if we cross brands, I don't know that all this whole array of dream matches opens up, even for AJ Styles.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, he's a relatively new wrestler in WWE, but he was on Raw for a while. So, you know, the first half of his tenure in WWE was in the mix with Raw wrestlers, so they haven't really been apart long enough. Yeah, I think it's a fascinating year, especially if it doesn't come down to Cena versus Undertaker and thus Roman Reigns against Braun Strowman. I mean, are those kind of the barring any inside information swaying you, does that seem like the matches, besides Triple H and Seth and Goldberg and Lesnar, is Undertaker, Cena, and Reigns against Strowman? Reigns wins the Universal title, Strowman wins the Rumble. Do you think that's where most fans would think things are headed?
I would think so. I think, you know, if you put a gun to my head and said, you know, you have to book this, what do you think it'll be? That's what I would go with as far as a feeling. You know, and as far as AJ, getting back to him, maybe that, you know, Finn Balor is on his way back. I know it's a situation, again, where Balor's on Raw and Styles is on SmackDown, but I'm sure we could figure out a way to make that work. You know, is that a potential dream match or WrestleMania match? You know, perhaps. It's a weird situation right now. And you know, a guy like Balor is another perfect example. Injuries, you know, he was booked to be the first Universal Champion. He gets hurt, you know, immediately. That takes him out of the mix. Now he's ready to come back at Mania. He's almost like a new character again. He had such a short cup of coffee, really, on the main roster. Now you're trying to factor him into WrestleMania, perhaps. So it's just been a lot of factors along the way. Kevin Owens was not planned to be the Universal Champion, as we know, as Finn Balor. So it's just a lot of moving parts. And I think another big issue is you don't really have any more that bona fide number one lead baby face in the company. And it goes back to trying and trying and trying so hard to make Roman Reigns that guy. But he's just, as we know, he's not, still not there. The crowd does not think of him in that way. Seth's babyface run has been completely botched, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So you
yeah.
can't really call him a number one baby. Now you're back to the old guard, guys like John Cena and Undertaker. So it's an interesting, like, I don't think it's going to be a bad WrestleMania by any stretch of the imagination. I think, you know, you've got seven or eight matches here that are going to, I'm sure, be very good and marquee. But yeah, like you said, and like we've been saying, it's just, it's not that obvious of, well, this is a matchup that is WrestleMania worthy and it's going to knock it out of the park. I don't know what the main event would be, you know, the final match. I know WWE
yeah.
always says, well, there's six main events. Last year, obviously, Roman Reigns and Triple H going on last was a very bad decision. So, you know, what is it? Is it Cena and The Undertaker if that's the match? Like, I don't think you could do Goldberg-Lesnar. You know, Roman Reigns, I mean, would they make that mistake again? I don't know. There's just no, you know, there's no Hogan, you know, like in the old days when Hogan used to headline every WrestleMania. You don't have that anymore. So there's no Stone Cold. It's interesting.
It is. It's fascinating. I love it. I mean, Batista's going to win the Rumble, and then it's going to be Batista Orton, and we got to spend, you know, a month hoping that that Vince McMahon hears the pushback and changes it. You know, this is more fun in that respect. And I like, I mean, is everyone going to be excited about Roman Reigns against Braun Strowman if they do that match? Of course not. But the push for Braun's been well done, and
yeah.
Roman is a top guy, and you know, it's just, you know, it's kind of intriguing to see, can they have a good match and how will the crowd react to it? Because I could see the crowd cheering Braun Strowman despite Vince McMahon's best effort since the draft to get Strowman over as a heel. So, I mean, even a match that doesn't on paper look like it's going to be a classic athletic contest still has aspects of intrigue in it. Let's go to our first caller. Let's go to Jay in Tampa. Jay, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Wade. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I was just had pretty much just to piggyback off what you guys were saying a moment ago. When I was thinking about Undertaker, is it, you know, whatever direction he goes, is he gonna still continue to use like that character? I know, kind of like when he was on Monday, where what he was saying and stuff to Mick and to Stephanie was making them kind of take that deep throat of whether they should be scared, and you know, with the whole slow methodical movement. Is that, do you feel like that character still fits on the show? Or is he like the only, does it seem to you be the only real gimmick or character left on the show right now? If that makes sense.
I think I know what you're saying. Kevin, I mean, my thinking is, yeah, Undertaker is a character that stands out to a degree from the rest. I mean, I guess there's some, you know, Bray Wyatt has some of that characterism. But, I mean, I think that's what makes Undertaker stand out. I think it's an asset, not a negative, that Taker is so different than the rest of the roster at this point, and maybe even a callback to another era.
I agree with that. I think his character is so iconic. And, you know, if the caller is referring to maybe, like, the in-ring style kind of thing, you know, once the bell rings, Undertaker, it's not 1992 Undertaker. I mean, he doesn't move that slow and methodically and not sell and all that stuff like back in the day when he had the, you know, the white face and all that. Once the bell rings, it is, you know, it's not, I don't feel like his matches are boring and you're getting a slow plodding pace. I think he can still keep up. But here's a guy that comes around, you know, once or twice a year. So I think that character certainly still works as a special attraction. I don't know if he were an every week performer, would we get tired of that gimmick? You know, maybe, but it's such an iconic thing right now. You know, I think the fans, this is what they expect out of Mark Calaway. And if he were to come back, and I don't think you're going to see the American Badass or anything like that. And I think this is the character that people want to see.
During your years in WWE Creative, was there a question mark that whether Undertaker would wrestle, or were you always pretty sure he was going to?
I swear to God, pretty much every year. Well, not the first year I was there, I think it was, pretty much etched in stone. We were doing Triple H and Undertaker. But after that, it literally became, you know, we don't know if he's going to make it this year. You know, he may be done, especially after, you know, he got more banged up, and especially after what happened with him and Lesnar. I remember there was some real concern, you know, and Michael Hayes was the guy who was always in touch with him. And I remember there were several times, you know, we'd be talking about long-term plans and WrestleMania and stuff like that. He would come in and be like, boss, I talked to Take. It ain't looking good. I don't think he's going to make it. And we heard that a couple of years in a row. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't know how much of it was it a work? Were we working the room? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But obviously at the end of the day, he got in there and he came back. But, you know, he was, especially after the, you know, the streak ended, there was legitimate concern. He was not in good shape for quite a while. I mean, he was experiencing double vision. And I really do think there was at least at a point in time, I think there was some legitimate concern that he may not come back.
Interesting. Let's go to an email. Mike from Mike Souza from Leonardo, New Jersey says, waiting, Kevin, with so much speculation about who may win the Royal Rumble, I'd love to get your feedback on an idea I had. What I have loved about the Royal Rumble in the late 90s, early 2000s was seeing the up-and-comer or workhorse get a victory to propel him to the next level and face a top guy for the championship. The Rumble helped create stars such as Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels, but in recent years, it's been all too predictable. It can be argued that the two men who had the best years in 2016 are AJ Styles and The Miz, with multiple ways for WWE to still navigate storylines and get to the matchups they want for Mania. What if Miz pulls off a major upset, wins the Rumble, and goes on to face AJ for the title at Mania? You still get your box office attraction matches like Goldberg-Lesnar, while rewarding the wrestlers who performed the best the year before and giving them a platform to showcase what they can do for a championship. Thanks, as always, Mike Souza. Kevin, your thoughts on that? What are the odds of something like that happening? You mentioned earlier, and I've been talking about it, there's not that obvious opponent for AJ. Miz has had a good year. That would be a shocker, and I don't know that fans would reject it, because I think the fans who boo Batista and boo Reigns, recognize that Miz has put on a great comeback for his character and has been working hard and is somebody I think they look forward to seeing on TV as an entertaining heel. That's at least my perception. I mean, is that a plausible direction that they could go?
It's an interesting thought, and it's certainly outside the box, and it would surprise people. My gut feeling tells me no, that's not plausible. I mean, it'd be a heel-heel match, you know, if you did Miz and Styles, barring one of them turning. I think that would work against it. And I can tell by watching how Miz has been booked over the past year or so, having not been behind the scenes in a while, I can tell you people have changed their feelings about him behind the scenes. When I was there, a lot of producers, a lot of higher ups, very down on Miz. You know, they thought Miz TV was a channel changer. They wanted to kill that. They were very down on his in-ring work and didn't think he was believable. It got so bad at one point that I said, you know, he's obviously a talent. He's got some talent, whether it's you think he has the gift of gab or whatever. I pitched trying to make him like a general manager or a manager or something, just because I thought he had something to add. You know, and eventually he stuck with it and he impressed some people. And now, you know, you see where he's at. He's a worker I'm talking about all around performer. He not only has the gift of gab, he's become a good worker. And I know that might be, some people might choke on those words coming out of, you know, my mouth, but Miz is a good worker. Not going to say he's great, but he's good. He can have good matches with a lot of different guys. He's worked hard. It would be a nice reward, I think. But I don't really think it's that plausible. I don't think Miz and AJ is a match that would happen, or Miz being put over in the Rumble. I would be really shocked if something like that happened.
I think that when you say Miz is a good worker, I don't think anybody should scoff at that, because I think he's really smart in the ring. He's not – I actually like the fact that he's not out there just doing tons of dives through the ropes and trying to reinvent top rope moves and trying to dazzle people and get this as awesome chance. I at this stage of watching wrestling and observing what I think actually draws money, look down upon a match that gets a this is awesome chant at this point. Because to me, it doesn't mean that the moves that get a this is awesome chant don't add to a lot of matches. So I don't want to be too broad in my criticism of it. But my initial inclination when I hear "This is awesome" chant is that the wrestlers have sought out to get a different reaction than I think the one that's ideal to drawing money, which is getting people engaged in rooting for somebody to win and caring about the, or rooting for someone to lose too, and caring about the outcome, as opposed to just observing it like you would a halftime show at the NBA, at an NBA game. If you go to an NBA game, they have jugglers. They have the person who can balance a bunch of plates. They have all these kind of fun little things that they do, and it's neat and it's kind of awesome. And people are, you know, who are going up to the bathroom or the concession stands might stop and turn around and look and ooh and ah, but the main event is the score of the game that counts in the standings. And I think Miz wrestles a style in the context of pro wrestling, of course, where people care more about the outcome than they do scoring the really cool spots, or they're not thinking about what a great effort the wrestlers have gone to. Does that make sense, the way that I'm kind of explaining why I think he's a good worker?
Absolutely. I think that's a great analogy. I think when you see a Miz match, and look, there have been some "This is awesome" chants during Miz matches, you know, so I think the match, a couple of them with Ziggler, maybe got "This is awesome." But I absolutely agree with what you're saying. You're invested emotionally in the winner and the loser rather than just sitting back and watching a great performance or a great, you know, I don't want to be derogatory, say stunt show, but something like that where you're reacting to the big moves and the spectacle of it rather than, wow, I really want to see this guy win or this guy lose. You go back to the old days, you know, no one was chanting "This is awesome" when, you know, Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair were battling it out, or, you know, gosh, I go all the way back to, you know, Superstar Billy Graham and Bruno Sammartino, but they were cheering like crazy for the baby face and cheering like, you know, and jeering like crazy for the heel. And it was a roller coaster and they were emotional about it and they were on the edge of their seats. And, you know, nobody was doing moonsaults or, you know, 450 splashes or anything like that. So, I think Miz is, his style is in a sense kind of a throwback. And, there's all different kinds of definitions to what a quote-unquote good worker or great worker is. And, yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, Triple H is a very good worker. I don't think I've ever seen Triple H do a moonsault or anything like that. So,
right.
You know, but he's a storyteller. And to your point, that's exactly what Miz has learned how to do, is tell stories in the ring. You know, that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. If you're joining us as the show is on the air, I'm Wade Keller, joined by Kevin Eck, former WWE creative team member. We're going to talk to Kevin about what he's doing these days a little bit later in the program. We do invite your phone calls, 515-605-9345, and your emails at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. I do want to note that we've got our VIP sale going on right now. I launched it and announced it on Monday. I have only publicized it on the live cast at this point. You can get a full month of VIP membership for 99 cents. So that's $9.01 off the normal subscription rate. You can also take that same discount, $9.01, off a 3-month or a 1-year subscription. All you do is go to pwtorch.com/govip and enter coupon code at the bottom of the sign-up form, 99RUMBLE, 99RUMBLE, as in 99 cents for a full month of VIP membership. 99RUMBLE is a coupon code. Get on board. Give us a try. If you're not sure what comes with a VIP membership, you can scroll through all the features at pwtorch.com/govip. Besides the normal array of features, about 75 VIP exclusive podcasts per month. Yesterday, in fact, we had 5 different audio shows go up. We have tons of VIP exclusive content for members, and the podcasts are compatible with iPhone and Android podcast apps and iTunes. And you can stream them right from our ad-free website that's exclusively available for VIP members. All kinds of ways to access the audio, plus access to over 1,400 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter. It's a magazine-style layout newsletter. You can download it in PDF format, flip through the pages, the photos, the art, the writing, the headlines. We've covered the wrestling business with kind of an insider's perspective. Torch talks with some of Pro Wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, cover stories, behind-the-scenes tidbits in the newswire, pay-per-view reports, detailed match rundowns with My Star ratings, roundtable reviews from the staff, all kinds of great coverage of pro wrestling, and it's at your fingertips. You can scroll through whatever year you became a wrestling fan. If it's since the late 1980s, you can go through and relive those early years by reading back issues of The Torch on a tablet or all-text versions of the newsletters on your phone or on your laptop. And you get ad-free access to our website with all the content that comes with it, plus a new newsletter every week, a new 20 years ago back issue in PDF and alt-text format every Saturday morning, a new retro radio show every Thursday night. Last Thursday, the Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show went up with John Arezzi as host, and his guests were Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer and me, and we all talked about WrestleWar, WCW WrestleWar 92. It just ended that night, and we basically did a post-WrestleWar radio show talking about that and the hiring of Bill Watts and some other really interesting, fascinating topics from that time frame. So if you like this show, imagine being able to listen to us talk about 1992, but a lot of the same people. Who are active in wrestling, either in the ring sometimes, or like Undertaker, or behind the scenes, are part of our conversation back in 1992. And you can catch up on past retro radio shows too. We have RSS feeds dedicated to different themes and different shows that come with the VIP membership. One final note, because it's Rumble season, we're doing a special Royal Rumble themed RSS feed. And that includes a special edition of a VIP audio show from Pat McNeil and Greg Parks, Torch columnists, who Sunday recorded a countdown show of the last 10 Royal Rumbles, ranking them in order from best to worst. Which Royal Rumble matches were aesthetically the most exciting and the best, and booking-wise succeeded the most. They did a show dedicated to running down the last 10. And coming up later this week, we're going to start putting up the past dozen Royal Rumble post-event roundtables that we recorded for VIP members the night of the Royal Rumble. So as soon as the Rumble ended, I would go on, we would record a roundtable show with Bruce Mitchell and most often Pat McNeil and do a roundtable discussion of the just completed Royal Rumble. And we will have a dedicated RSS feed just for those shows. They'll also be in the mix on our main RSS feed. And so you can relive what we had to say the night of the event, the last 12 years since we started doing VIP post-pay-per-view shows for VIP members. So a lot of cool reasons to go VIP, 99 cents and 3 minutes of your time or less to sign up, probably a minute or two actually, to sign up. And you spend 99 cents and you're a VIP member, and you can find out what being a VIP member is all about. So check it out, pwtorch.com/goVIP, coupon code 99RUMBLE. We'd love to have you as a member, and we'd love to earn your business beyond that first discounted month. All right, we're going to go to our bottom of the hour break a little bit late. And when we come back, the rest of the way, Kevin Eck, your phone calls, your emails, more conversation on Royal Rumble and WrestleMania season. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we are back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by former WWE creative team member Kevin Eck. Kevin, you have continued now to write about professional wrestling on a regular basis, going back to your roots. Talk about how people can read what you're writing about and what some of the recent topics have been.
Well, I'm writing a column now for a Baltimore-based sports website. The column is called The Hot Tag, and you can read it at pressboxonline.com. It comes out every Wednesday, and a new column every Wednesday. The past 2 weeks, I've done my awards for 2016. Everybody does awards, so I figure I had to do mine, you know, picking the wrestler of the year and tag team of the year and such. So that, it was in two parts, last Wednesday and this Wednesday. And again, you can read a new column every Wednesday, pressboxonline.com, The Hot Tag.
Excellent. Check it out. You do great writing on wrestling, and as you can tell on our conversations, the people who enjoy this show, I think, would enjoy your approach to analyzing and writing about professional wrestling. I think the lens through which you analyze it is similar to what we do on the show, and I think that's why we get a really good response when you're on the program. Kevin, we have an interesting email, and it does a little bit aside from speculating on the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania for a moment. Let's see if I can bring this in. I actually switched emails. That's not the one I want. This is good radio. Hold on here. Here we go. Hal from South Carolina says, "Hey, Wade, I was watching the latest 205 Live and was instantly taken out of the moment during Rich Swann's promo with Neville when Swann said that Neville had ears like Dumbo. personally, I was insulted because I got teased a lot too when I was younger for my ears and had people calling me Dumbo as well. But I also noticed that many of the fans in the arena also booed Swan when he made the comment. I'm not sure if the crowd booed because they recognized that making fun of other people's appearance is just not acceptable in this day and age, or because Neville's a heel and was way more over than Swan as a babyface. I agree with what you said on the last SmackDown livecast, that basically WWE should tread carefully with perpetuating a bully mentality like JBL's commentary about Carmella's jobber opponent. But I believe this should be especially true with babyfaces like Swan or The New Day, who make fun of Titus O'Neil just for tripping and go on to basically haze him. I could make sense of heels making fun of other people, but babyfaces like Swan and New Day, babyfaces should be a lot smarter on the mic, and it makes WWE look like a bunch of hypocrites with their anti-bullying campaign. Eventually, I got over the teasing, but what should other little kids now who are clumsy or have big ears think after watching Raw or SmackDown? I guess my question is, what should WWE creative do to make their babyfaces sound smarter on the mic? And also related, is 205 Live on the right track with two babyfaces falling flat, first TJ Perkins and now seemingly Swan? I'm just not invested in 205 Live like I was the Cruiserweight Tournament. I've been listening to the live cast for about a year now, just joined VIP a couple weeks ago in time for WrestleMania season, and I love it. Keep up the great work, and thanks. All right, cool. Thanks, Al. I think that's an interesting topic. SmackDown on Tuesday irked me. I thought JBL going after CJ Lundy the way that he did with one insult after another bothered me, in part because in my mind I just imagined Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn, the two most handsome people on planet Earth, were laughing uproariously on the headset and maybe feeding JBL insults to throw at CJ Lundy. And I think Al's right. Al brings up a point that it's one thing for a heel to do it, but another thing for a babyface. With the whole, you know, anti-bullying campaign and be a star, is WWE, Kevin, hypocritical when it comes to some of the approaches they take to either A, ostensibly entertain us, or B, try to get a baby face over by insulting a heel like what Rich Swann did?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that point more as it pertains to baby faces going the low road. I remember writing about this when I worked for the Baltimore Sun a few years back with Jack Swagger, who was a heel, and I don't remember who the baby faces were. It was several. I think Christian was one. Again, this is, you know, these are lines that Christian's obviously being fed and told to say. Making fun of his lisp, you know, Jack Swagger's speech impediment. To see it, baby face, to do that to a heel, it doesn't make any, you know, you're supposed to be the good guy. And there's a very likely chance that there are kids in the audience that may have a speech impediment at the show or at home watching. You know, how do they feel that they're, you know, maybe one of their favorite wrestlers is making fun of a guy with a speech impediment? So I think sometimes those things get lost when WWE is trying to, you know, it's the obvious thing is to go after someone's physical appearance or their, you know, something like a speech impediment. It's the obvious thing to do. It's cheap. And look, I have no problem. Heels are supposed to be bad people. I have no problem if it's a heel. Babyface, yeah, I think, you know, especially in this day and age, and, you know, WWE wants to be out in the forefront with the anti-bullying campaign and be a star and all that stuff. It really does send just the opposite message when you have a babyface going that route. You know, let's be a little bit more creative and come up with some other way. Certainly Neville's done some dastardly things as of late that we can point out these flaws in his personality or in his character without going the low road and saying, oh, he has big ears. You know, it's just it's not creative in any way, shape, or form. And again, it does send a bad message.
And on top of that, too, when a heel does it, you have to have a babyface pushback. That's kind of my issue with JBL, too, is he just got to go on and on and on. And it was, I mean, the Mauro Ranallo and David Otunga, it just sort of sat there. They didn't go, hey, wait a second, JBL. You know, I mean, there was no pushback. And that's part of it, too. Heel is doing that. Not that we want to turn pro wrestling into, you know, the after school specials. I don't know how dated that sounds, but you know, the more you know message of, you know, bullying is bad. I mean, you don't want to watch pro wrestling like that, but you do want some sense that and part of it is just the goal of the heel is to get heat. But you don't get heat if all the baby faces are standing around nodding along or not saying anything because it's sort of implied, yeah, CJ Lundy, she is a freak, and let's make fun of her. It's different when you're making fun of La Luchadora and her outfit, but when you're just making fun of the way JBL did on Tuesday, and it just felt like he piled on and piled on. It was rough. Did you watch?
It was gratuitous. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Is that the type of thing that your understanding is Vince McMahon and Kevin, and maybe Kevin Dunn feeds into it or reinforces it, that there's just something about Vince's personality where he gets a kick out of that kind of a segment and that kind of commentary?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's the tone is set from the top, and Vince, you know, loves to have fun at people's expense. I mean, I don't think I'm throwing any tails out of school there. you know, when there's something that you can easily make fun of, then yeah, he does love that kind of stuff. And I'm sure there was a lot of laughing over the headsets. Look, I don't think JBL needed a whole lot of prodding to go there, because I think that's very much his personality as well. But I'm sure, yes, Vince especially, and Kevin to some extent, were having a good laugh about it. But, yeah, I think it the longer it went on, the more it was just – it wasn't any kind of heat. It was just – it was more like almost like a channel-changing type thing where it was so gratuitous. And what's the point? I mean, this isn't even a contracted performer we're going to see from week to week. This was just an enhancement talent in for one match. So, you know, what are you trying to accomplish there? What's the goal of that segment? It's just, there was no point to it. And you know, to your point, yeah, there wasn't really any pushback on it. It was JBL just going on a rant and no one really chiming in to take an opposing view. So it was, that mentality existed when I was there. And, you know, it still exists. I'll give you a quick example of We started doing a storyline with Cody. Now, as stupid as this sounds, okay, I'll take credit for pitching this. But Cody Rhodes, if you'll remember, had a mustache that was really bad. You remember that? Okay, and I don't know why he grew it, like, but he did, right? And we were struggling to find something for Cody to do. And Caitlin was on the roster at the time, and she had done some stuff on social media where she had joked that she loves guys with mustaches. So I was the one in a meeting who said, Caitlin's not doing anything. Cody's not doing anything. He was doing his best friend's gimmick sort of with Damian Sandow, the two best friends. I said, what if, and he was a heel and Caitlin was a baby face. And I was like, what if we do a storyline where she's attracted to him because of his mustache, and that creates friction between him and his best friend Sandow. And we've got a little story of a woman getting between two best friends and what happens. Vince was never hot about it, but you know, he's like, oh, okay. You know, I was like, all right, we need some filler. We'll start this. So we did start doing a few backstage segments, and then the Bella Twins came back to the company. They were gone at that time, and then they came back. And immediately we started a storyline with the Bellas getting involved with Sandow and Cody. And I remember speaking, I said, well, wait a minute, but we've already started on TV with this thing of you know, Cody and Caitlin. I mean, it's like, ah. God damn it, if the Bella Twins are showing Cody any attention, why the hell would he ever look at Caitlin? And I was like, well, you know, and of course you can't say this to the boss, but I'm like, well, that's one man's opinion, you know?
Yeah.
Like Vince used to say sometimes, you know, you like chocolate, I like vanilla, everybody. Some people may think Caitlin is very attractive, maybe even more attractive than one of the Bellas, you know? But that was the kind of the thinking back then is, you know, she's whatever, she's built like a guy, or she's too thick, or this or that, you know, everybody had to look like the Bella Twins, or Kelly. So that stuff has always existed. If you remember, they did some jokes about Caitlyn's weight when she was, you know, in her angle with AJ. You know, you can go back to the Mickey James days and Piggy James. I mean, this stuff has gone on for a long time, with guys and girls, you know?
Yeah, no question about it. I just, you know, on SNL, they did the skit on Donald Trump and what he sees when he looks in the mirror, and John Cena, it was John Cena in a Trump wig, you know, like that Donald Trump, when he looks in the mirror, he sees this incredibly physically fit, muscular man, and kind of joking. What do Vince McMahon, Kevin Dunn, and JBL see when they look in the mirror? You know, like, I mean, who are they? I mean, I know Vince, you know, what Vince sees, because we see him on the cover of Muscle and Fitness at age 70 and all of that, but my God, I don't even have words to describe it, but no, great. That's a great anecdote, and I think says a lot. Did you watch Bring It to the Table last week, Kevin?
I did not. I know about it, but I did not watch it.
There was a segment in there where JBL told Peter Rosenberg, after Rosenberg referred to Undertaker as Taker, he goes, "Oh, you're that familiar with him, huh? You can refer to him as Taker." And it struck me not so much like that JBL was genuinely insulted that, you know, that a shorter term was used for Undertaker's name conversationally. It seemed like it was just JBL is sort of, his reputation is he's always looking for something like that to then
yeah.
intimidate you, bully you a little bit, put you in your place. And I thought that was a really telling moment. I made a mental note when we booked you for the show, when you agreed to come on the show, to ask you about that. If you faced any of moments like that, maybe with JBL, but maybe with others, where you show up and it's, all right, if you're going to be in this fraternity, in this clubhouse, so to speak, there's going to be some unwritten rules. We're going to test you on it. We're going to confront you on it. And we're going to let you know your place and, you know, see if you push back or you cower, that kind of thing. I've heard stories like this, you know, all over. We talked about Miz earlier. Certainly he faced it with JBL early on. Did you either witness it or were you on the receiving end of anything like that? Where, because it's not often you get to see JBL in JBL mode being that side of JBL that we hear about. But we got a glimpse of him doing it to Pete Rosenberg last Monday night.
Yeah, I can, you know, I was fortunate. I came into the company at a time when a lot of that stuff, as far as hazing, you know, the writers and things like that, that had pretty much stopped by the time I got there. No one really bothered me, but, you know, what I can say is talking to guys that had been there for a while. A guy like Brian Gewirtz, okay, if there ever was something that happened on the writing team where one of us felt like in any small way we were getting that kind of treatment, Brian was not the most sympathetic guy because he would say, you have no idea. You know, you have no idea what it was like a few years ago when I first got here and what I had to deal with. You know, you guys have it really easy today. So I never got anything like that from a veteran. The one, you know, it's funny because having worked in the media, I knew JBL on a very limited basis, but I had interviewed him a couple times when I worked at the Baltimore Sun, and he knew who I was. So when I started with the company, we already kind of, he knew my name, and, you know, I remember when I first got there, he wasn't there. And then they brought him in to start doing commentary again. And, you know, he remembered me and all that, and we got along fine. But then came the time for the Hall of Fame, and every writer gets assigned to an inductee and the person inducting him. You know, whether you're just there to help them, whatever they need. Some guys need help writing their speeches. Some guys have it all prepared. You're just there to help them with whatever they need, if anything. So I was assigned Ron Simmons and JBL. Ron Simmons, one of the classiest guys you will ever meet. I consider Ron a friend. When we see each other on occasion, still gives me a big hug. Ron was so good. He pulled out a little, you know, some note cards, and he's like, I got it all down here, and he read it to me, and I said, great. The only thing I would suggest is you don't really have an intro or an end. Like, and I gave him a suggestion. Here's what I would do for your intro. Here's what I would do. And he's like, I love it. I love it. That's great. And he did it. Did it exactly the way I suggested it. So then I had to go up to JBL. And I'm like, you know, I know JBL is a very articulate guy, and I know how he feels about writers in general, but I had to do my job. Went up to him, hey, John, you know, I've been assigned to you. I know you're doing Ron's induction. And he cuts me off. They're going to give me a rider. I need a rider to help me induct my best friend, Ron Simmons. Good Lord, a rider. I was like, okay, you know, I just kind of, it wasn't that malicious, but it was boisterous. And I was like, okay, you know, I laughed it off. I'm like, all right, John, you know, if you do need anything, just let me know. Eventually, he even said to me, he goes, he had a couple things about Ron's playing career. He's like, could you just, like, look those things up and verify I got all the right, this, that? Sure, John.
And then did you laugh and go, I thought you didn't need a writer to help you with this.
Of course, I did not. You know, I took it.
Yeah, I know.
No reason to go there. But I'll tell you what, you remember, and if you want to go back and watch his speech, one of the first things he brought up was, you know, when they told me I wasn't going to induct my friend Ron, they wanted to give me a rider. And I'm in the back, you know, I'm on headset because you have to be on headsets when you're assigned to these things. And there I am on headsets and you know, standing 5 feet away from Vince McMahon. And there's JBL going on about, why did they give me a rider? So that's the only thing, you know, that was very, very mild. You know, like, to me, that was almost just like a good-natured rib more than anything else.
Right.
But so yeah, I was very fortunate. I never got any of that. Look, when I first joined the writing team, it's a very close, I think if anything, there's, I would say hazing, but there's a, you have to earn your spot because there's so much people coming in and people leaving, you know, people don't last and leave and there's a lot of turnover. So you're not exactly welcomed by the other writers with open arms and, hey, let's all go out for a drink after work today. It's more like, oh, okay, another new guy. Let's see what he has. So you're not very you don't feel very welcome when you first walk in the room or you first go on the road. I likened it a lot to, like, it was like high school. It was, there was a table where all the cool kids sit, and you're not invited to that table. You know, you have to stick around for a while and sort of prove that you can be, you know, seated next to them. So that's the only thing that I can say was negative is, you know, I wished it would have been a little more of, hey, we got a new guy on the team. Let's all, you know, make WWE magic together. And it really wasn't that.
I know that some writers befriend wrestlers. That happens because two human beings oftentimes can become friends if they share things in common, despite one being a wrestler and one being a writer.
Right.
As amazing as it sounds. Was there any kind of unwritten rule or stigma if for hanging out afterwards at the hotel, at the restaurant, or the bar, if like a wrestler would be seen fraternizing in public with a writer? Was that, you know, you talk about the cool kids at the table, and it's like somebody on the football team hanging out with somebody who's in band. That would be like something people gossip about. And I imagine WWE sometimes having that kind of mentality. Was that ever the case? Like, oh, that wrestler's kissing up to the writer by hanging out with him? Or did that not happen very often because it just was seen as wrong, or it just socially didn't happen?
It wasn't like anyone ever said, you know, that's a no-no or don't do that. But I think there was, I mean, look, we were all intelligent enough people to see that, you know, we hold some level of power being the guys there helping Vince with the storylines and writing the shows, that if you're a talent, you know, might not be the worst thing in the world to get to know these guys and maybe befriend them. I think there were some very legitimate friendships that were formed between writers and talent. And there are guys that I worked with then that I consider friends today. And there's nothing I can do for them today, you know, but we're still friends. You know, I can text Drew McIntyre right now and get a response. But I think there was always, like, on our end, it was like, well, let's just be wary. Now, some of the more grizzled wrestling writers that were there, the veterans would say, you know, look, talent doesn't, they don't care about you. The only reason that they're trying to befriend you is because they know that you can help their career. So you may think you're friends, but you're not really friends. And I think in some instances, it was a case-by-case basis, right? I think in some instances, that's true. But in other cases, I think, you know, we're all human beings and we can form friendships. So, yeah, I've made friends there that were talent that I still have today. It was never a, like, this is a, you know, like, you can't date a wrestler, you know, like Vince said Stephanie could never date a wrestler, and we see how that turned out. It was never like, don't ever fraternize with talent. You know, that just was never said. I think it was understood that, you know, just be aware. You know, be aware that there may be ulterior motives, and also be aware that, you know, you don't want to get the perception, if you are a writer, that you're playing favorites. That's the one thing. And look, some of that went on. I know Brian Gewirtz went through a lot of that before I got there, where people felt like he was, you know, The Rock was his guy, and Edge and Christian and Kurt Angle were his guys, and he didn't want to write for anybody else. I know he felt some of that backlash. And even when I worked with Brian, I know that John Cena, when we were doing the Rock Cena builds, Cena, whether he was half serious or totally serious, felt like...
All right, I'm going to jump in here and note that our show ran long, and we're going to split off the last 30, 40 minutes of the show and make it a VIP exclusive portion of the program as a separate post. There's some fascinating behind-the-scenes notes on the John Cena Rock feud that Kevin Eck goes into, including some things that were said at creative meetings by Brian Gewirtz and John Cena, and does Kevin Eck believe, and why does he believe, in whether everything that went on with Cena and Rock was fine with both of them, or was one of them in particular not thrilled with the way things were going, and some fascinating Vince McMahon anecdotes. How do people perceive Vince behind the scenes? What are some of the examples that he has of Vince being very hands-on in certain areas, and people kind of joking about how Vince is the master of everything, and able to make everything better, even areas that he doesn't have a lot of experience in otherwise. But and how is Vince in terms of the intimidation factor, and some anecdotes about how Vince operates and keeps people on edge? And is Vince sharper than ever, or is a perception he's slipping a little bit? And what are some examples to back up that argument? Plus some speculation and on the women's division and where that might be headed for WrestleMania. Plus quite a bit more. So if you are interested in getting the VIP after show, be sure to go VIP with our 99-cent sale. And at the conclusion here with Kevin Eck, we'll go back to the final few minutes of the show here. You can hear more details on how to get that VIP sale so that you can hear the last 40 minutes of this long and fascinating interview with ex-WWE creative team member Kevin Eck. I think that Fatal 4-Way makes enough sense and is intriguing enough that I can endorse that over only two of the four being on Mania. Or even two singles matches, but one of them is on the prelim and they get 3 minutes.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. The only thing, I don't want to see a pattern develop because we had a triple threat women's match last year, potentially a Fatal 4-Way this year. I hope it's not one of those things where every year the big women's match at WrestleMania has to be it can't be a one-on-one match. You know, I think, but if Bayley and Charlotte is the biggest one-on-one match they can do, maybe from a marquee standpoint, maybe the four-way is better. I just feel like we've seen Sasha and Charlotte in the ring together so many times.
Yeah.
It's a little hard for me to get excited about them being involved in a match again in any capacity. But I do think that's the way they're going to go.
Yep. Kevin, thank you so much. Always great talking to you about wrestling and just your analysis of current storylines along with some of the anecdotes from your days there. It's just fantastic. Appreciate it.
I always appreciate the opportunity to come on.
Anything else you want to plug? How about Twitter?
Twitter, it's Kevin Eck _ WWE. Yes, I still have WWE in my Twitter handle. just because I want to, because it attracts attention.
Exactly. No, good for you. All right.
Can I throw out one last plug for MCW Pro Wrestling? This is big news. This is big news.
We had a request on Twitter for you to bring up MCW also, so I would have felt bad not doing it. Please do, yeah.
This is big news. January the 28th, the challenge just went out on Facebook Live yesterday from Broken Matt Hardy. Broken Matt and Brother Nero Jeff Hardy have issued a challenge to the MCW Pro Wrestling Tag Team Champions, which is a team that I manage called the Ectorage. Dirty Money, Eric Chappell. The Hardys have challenged us, the MCW Tag Team Champions, in a title versus title match. So January 28th in Joplin, Maryland, it will be the TNA World Tag Team Champions, the Hardys, against the MCW Tag Team Champions, the Ectorage, with both titles on the line. So, Wade, the next time I'm on the show, I could potentially be the manager of the TNA World Tag Team Champions.
That's tremendous. Did you watch TNA last Thursday, Kevin?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I have enjoyed TNA more than WWE for several months now. To me, and I think part of it is that it's, as far as Raw, it's 2 hours instead of three, you know. But it just, I like the pacing of it, and I like the storyline, and I know they've had a lot of upheaval behind the scenes, but I think the product on the air has really been consistently good.
Excellent. Well, next time you're on, maybe we'll give TNA a little bit more attention than we did on today's show. But it's tough. It's tough in Rumble season and WrestleMania season
to
stray too far, especially with your time there. But I look forward to next time you're on the show. If you will kindly join us another time somewhere this season, and that is it for today. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Excellent. Kevin Eck, former creative team member, and check out his blog as he plugged earlier. Thanks to all our listeners and callers. This is the PW Torch Livecast. We are running our sale. It is our Royal Rumble sale. Just go to pwtorch.com/govip and enter coupon code 99RUMBLE. And when you enter 99RUMBLE, no space, just 99RUMBLE, you'll get a month of VIP membership for just 99 cents. Or you can take that $9.01 discount, $10 rate, and instead apply it to the 3 month or 1 year rates, which bring your monthly average price down quite a bit. So go to pwtorch.com/govip and enter coupon code on the sign up form, which is mobile friendly, by the way. You can sign up while you're at a stoplight. That's about how long it takes to sign up. So go to pwtorch.com/govip. Click on the sign up form, and at the bottom it has a coupon code. Enter 99RUMBLE to get a full month for 99 cents, and that's going to include the last dozen Royal Rumble post pay-per-view roundtables that were VIP exclusive, the night of the last dozen Rumble events, along with Pat McNeil and Greg Parks rating in a new audio show that we just put up for VIP members on Sunday, ranking the last 10 Rumbles from best to worst. But also tonight, a new Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show will go up. Dozens of, actually well over 100 of these retro radio shows from the late 80s through the Attitude Era are available as soon as you sign up for VIP membership, with a new episode going up every Thursday night, if we're on schedule, and we try to be. But on average, about one new retro radio show, usually going up on Thursday nights. Here's some details on those vintage radio shows and another great feature that comes with a diverse array of VIP exclusive features for our VIP members. As a PW Torch Livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes, available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday Morning Wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership, new ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big-name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member. All right, that'll do it for today's episode. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PW Torch. And follow our sister brand at MMA Torch. We thank all of you for joining us today, and until tomorrow, where Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant take over the hosting duties of this program. I'll be back Monday night after Raw. This is Wade Keller thanking you and signing off. This is life.